Welcome into the 9 o'clock hour. Chris Thomas tonight. Turtle with you for another hour. Weeknights here 6 to 10 on 92.9 The Game. We'll get back into the Falcons talk. Appreciate everybody who called in. We are rolling tonight on this topic about Michael Penix Jr., the OC and the HC, so I'll make sure we get more of your calls in before I get out of here at 404-726-0929. But before we do that, I did want to talk some college ball today because we do have a huge game coming up here in Athens this weekend, plus a lot of other headlines to get to. So let's head out to the Wade4.com hotline. Welcome in Joe DeLeon of A to Z Sports, college writer and host there. Joe, how worried, maybe worried isn't even the right word, but how seriously should Georgia be taking Alabama this weekend after Ty Simpson has sort of gotten this offense back on track the last couple of weeks?
Well, I definitely think that they need to take them seriously because the rivalry and the history between these two teams that have built up in recent years, especially what happened last year, it's definitely important to take this game seriously. But I will say we got to contextualize the performances that Ty Simpson has had and who they have faced. We got to remember the struggles that they showed in week one against Florida State. Now, I know a lot of teams, week one, you're going to bounce back. You're going to be able to improve on some issues. I think that those problems they had with protecting Simpson and having issues running the ball in that game are going to show up in this game against Georgia. And it's a big reason why I'm pushing the Bulldogs to win this game and to cover the 2.5-point spread that's out there right now.
The other big game of the weekend, obviously, Penn State and Oregon. Penn State really getting its first test. Seems like Oregon is a well-oiled machine right now. What do you think happens in this one?
This one, I admittedly have had like a really tough time getting a good pulse on it. And the big driving force is because I don't know for certain what narrative is the most correct on either team. And what I mean by this is you got Penn State, who's tremendous on defense, but Drew Aller has been erratic and inconsistent. He has not stepped up to the way that we thought that he will. But is that true? Or is this Andy Kotelnicki holding back the offense and not really opening things up, and the lights come on in the whiteout game at night in Happy Valley, and he goes and really flashes and plays to his potential? Which version do we get? And on Oregon's side, they've been so darn impressive. They have smoked everybody that they've played. They've done it effortlessly and with such ease. But are they just like Tennessee was at the beginning of the year last year? Are they a team that's blowing their way through their beginning schedule, but the minute that they're tested, are they going to start to struggle? I do think if I were to determine the direction of this game, I do have a lot more faith in Dante Moore and this Oregon squad. I think if it comes down to a final drive for each quarterback, I'm going to trust Dante Moore a little bit more. As much as Aller's more experienced, I feel like we have so much evidence of the times that he has failed in those late game situations compared to Moore, who is starting to ascend into one of the best quarterbacks in college football. So I'm taking Oregon in this, but either direction and outcome wouldn't surprise me.
Can Oklahoma weather the storm without Mateer?
That's a great question. And I think that the better way of framing this is we're going to really learn how good Oklahoma is without him. And I know that Hawkins steps in after he played a little bit last year, and he did some nice stuff, but he was up and down as a youngster and at least showed that at some point he could take over maybe next year. But the way that we're going to figure out if this team is legit is if their defense can pick up the slack, if their offense is problem, and if Ben Arbuckle is as brilliant of an offensive mind as he is, or if he's riding off of Mateer's skill set. I have been very wary about how good this Oklahoma offense is, because their offensive line, I think, is really poor. And I think that Mateer makes them look better. It kind of reminds me of when Caleb Williams won the Heisman a couple of years ago. USC's offensive line was really bad, but Caleb Williams was really tremendous at improvising. So their sack statistics, pressure statistics, it didn't look bad that year. Except when we watched the film, we saw him running for his life quite a bit. The same thing applies here for Mateer. Without him, are they going to be able to scheme things and get creative with getting Satania and Deion Burks the football, or are they going to get completely stonewalled and they're going to have to hope that their defense can punch their way out of a close game, especially against Texas?
What's going on with LSU's offense?
I believe that the biggest issue with that, and if you ask anyone associated with LSU, is Nussmeier has been banged up. That is what Brian Kelly has said, that he has had an abdominal issue, I believe was what it was. And he's now starting to get fully healthy. And now as he's starting to play better, which he looks great against Southeastern Louisiana, albeit an FCS opponent, if he is going to get closer to what his actual ceiling is and he can look as decisive as he did against Clemson, they will get back in stride. I do think part of this, we need to see Joe Sloan, the offensive coordinator, do a more deliberate job of scheming more effective run plays. I feel like that there's just generally not been a lot of creativity from him at running the football, and he abandoned it way too quickly. So if they can get a better job of getting Caden Durham the ball and out in space, and Nussmeier's alleged injury ends up healing up, I think that they're going to hit their stride.
What do you make of Carson Beck's season so far? Miami's 4-0, number two in the AP top 25, but I feel like he hasn't even really scratched the surface of the potential of that offense, and it seems like they've been in a couple of tight games that maybe they shouldn't have been.
I think that he's really flashed what he's capable of doing, and this offense has really shown that they don't need him to do everything. I felt like last year when he was with Georgia, he didn't need to do everything, but he and Bobo felt like that was the case for some reason. And it led to a lot of hero ball. It led to a lot of him taking shots that didn't need to be taken. You eventually hear from Carson Beck at ACC Media Days reflecting and being very personally aware of, hey, I got to be better about that. I don't need to go for the home run every single time. And I think we're starting to see that now. I think we're starting to see, especially in the Florida game, they get to lean on the three deep running back room that they have with Marty Brown and Fletcher and Lyle. They've got so many different guys that they can turn to that run super hard that when he's not playing well, they can still win and they can still prevail. I think some of the big time throws that he made against Notre Dame and against USF go, that he eventually, as the season progresses, he can help this team win in late game situations. The only thing, and why you said he's only really scratching the surface, I do wonder how healthy his elbow is. It is very complicated to recover from the injury that he suffered, baseball-like injury, trying to get velocity back on your ball. I wonder if this is going to be something where maybe at the end of the year we start to see the normal version of Carson Beck as he's been getting more and more healthy.
Talking all things college ball with our buddy Joe DeLeon. Check him out, A2Z Sports. Which team is more able to bounce back, Clemson or Notre Dame?
Oh, it's going to be Notre Dame. I think Clemson's cooked. I think that this Clemson team is completely sold out, especially after the way that they played against Syracuse. They look like they could care less. They looked completely directionless against the Syracuse team at home that they should have smoked. Barely showed up. And on Notre Dame's side, there's buy-in. The team that they have, the young core on offense of playmakers and their new offensive line, it's finding its stride. They have shown some big playability, and C.J. Carr has delivered us flashes of what he's eventually going to be in 2 years when he's an upperclassman. He's aggressive. He's free-thinking when they open up the offense. Their issues have more to do with really bad scheme on defense, and they've done a really poor job of getting after the quarterback and generating pressures. Chris Ash, the new defensive coordinator, has put a lot of off-zone coverage. He's not been trying to do anything to rattle opposing quarterbacks whatsoever. I think if at some point the defensive woes that they have continue to pile up, you at least have different defensive minds on that coaching staff that he can turn, that Marcus Freeman can turn to. Whether it's him taking over play calling, having been Notre Dame's defensive coordinator not that long ago, or going to Mickens, who's the defensive backs coach, who they considered giving the defensive coordinator job in the first place. I think that there is a lot more self-reflection that has been done and been willing to be done at Notre Dame, which we've seen over the past couple, or the past year more so, compared to Clemson, where Dabo Sweeney is constantly making the same mistakes over and over again.
Are you surprised Indiana's doing it again?
I'm not. I was a little surprised by how much they dominated Illinois. I thought that game was going to be a little bit closer. I thought if they were going to win confidently, it was going to be more a 14-point victory or something along those lines. But what I was confident in this offseason was that they were bringing back experience in the right positions. They didn't really lose much to the NFL draft. And they went in the portal, and instead of going and grabbing all G5 guys like they did the year before, they were able to entice a lot of big-name, premier transfer portal guys. They improved their offensive line. They rounded out their defense. But the most important aspect of this is the fact that they got Fernando Mendoza. And I think that Fernando Mendoza, at the end of the year, everybody's going to say, why didn't X team go after him? There are so many teams that are going to be kicking themselves that they weren't more aggressive about going and getting him. I really think, and I was on him as my number one quarterback in the preseason for the 2026 NFL draft. And now I'm starting to see everybody else is sprinkling him in there in these mock drafts. He is so physically gifted. He reminds me a lot of Matt Ryan. He can sling it. He's also a very underrated athlete. He's big. And we're seeing an efficiency from him as he went 21 of 23 with 5 touchdowns against Illinois. I think that everything works so, so well together that we're going to start to eventually see that this Indiana squad got better from a year ago.
Georgia Tech, is there a possibility? It looks tough because their schedule is so weak. So is there a possibility they could climb in the rankings, or are they just pretty much going to be between maybe 16 and 20 for the rest of the year?
I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, I feel like we always see this during the season, a team that's got a lighter schedule that they just slowly trickle their way up and up and work their way up. Like Notre Dame's a really good example. Last year, they had no business climbing as quickly as they did after the Northern Illinois loss, and lo and behold, they ended up as high as they did in the final playoff ranking. I think it almost doesn't even matter, though, because the path that they have is so favorable that if they win out or they go 11-1, they're in the ACC championship game. If you're 11-1 and you're in the ACC championship game, you're going to be one of the remaining teams, at the very least, if you don't win the ACC, to get into the college football playoff. I think as long as Brent Key, which he has shown, he is not a coach that is going to make silly mistakes because he's got such an attention to detail and they're so hard-nosed. As long as they don't slip up, they're going to be fine. The one thing that does give me a little pause, Haynes King has had inconsistencies with health and he's already had health issues. I'm very careful about like really projecting them. I love this team. And I love Jamal Haynes. And I think that there's a lot of dynamic playmaking that can come from it. But if Haynes King goes down like we saw last year, how much does this team take a step back? How much are they able to stay at the same level without him?
They can't.
That is probably going to be the biggest thing that hurts them.
Nope, they can't. And you know what the thing is, Joe, I've been on hashtag start Philo because he's shown you the ability to be competent. And if you're going up against NC State and you know, Virginia Tech and Duke, you don't – maybe Haynes King, you know, if you need him, he can come in and spell, but – you have a guy like Philo sitting there, use him. I mean, I don't like he to me, Haynes King should not have played last week. I know he wants to. I know that's his identity as a quarterback. But to your point, it's almost like you got to save your bullets, Joe.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny thinking about this. It's almost like in playoff baseball, trying to reserve your best arms. And I know that doesn't really happen with quarterbacks, but you bring up a really good point. And it happened already before the Clemson game where Haynes King didn't really play because he didn't need to, because you're playing a weak opponent. I think that Philo has shown some decent ability, but there's two advantages to playing him now. You get him more exposure against the bad teams, start him against the bad teams in the remaining stretch of your schedule that you feel confident in. He builds a little bit of confidence. You build an identity with him, and then you do have Haynes King like you're talking about. If he is as banged up, and there hasn't really feel like there's been a lot of clarity on what exactly is plaguing him. If Haynes King's as banged up as he was after the Colorado game, there's no point in rushing him back and asking him to play now. I'd rather save him for the remaining stretch of the season and him have him play the way that he did against Georgia last year, and they knock off a team like Georgia, and they maybe shock somebody in the ACC championship game, whatever it is. You're going to need Haynes King when it comes down to it.
Before I let you go, Mike Gundy's legacy, what is it to you? And does somebody who takes that job, is that A, an attractive job and a job in which in a couple of seasons you can get them back on track?
Well, it fully depends on if Oklahoma State financially commits more than they did in the final years of Gundy. And we saw after Brent Pry was fired by Virginia Tech that they suddenly announced that there was a 47 million dollar commitment to the athletics department and football specifically. If Oklahoma State does something similar, I think that then there is a path for them to be successful. My thing with the Gundy firing, I'm very almost pissed off about how it was handled. I get it that this team was bad and it felt like he wasn't really present as much as he's been mentally. It kind of felt like he was checked out. If you thought that he was such a bad coach, you should have given him the respect last offseason and asked him to retire and let things end. To do that to him, to fire him on a Tuesday in a game week, the way that they did with the legacy, he's one of the only coach that's willingly stuck around that hasn't jumped ship to go to a bigger and better program like Les Miles and Jimmy Johnson did. I think it's really disrespectful that they did that to them, and I'm really disappointed that they just cut ties like that after everything that he's done to keep that program relevant.
Joe, appreciate the time as always. We'll be checking you out, A to Z Sports. We'll chat soon.
Of course. Thanks as always.
All right. That is Joe DeLeon. When we get back, Zach Robinson, Raheem Morris, and Michael Penix Jr. all met the media today. I'll let you hear what they had to say coming up at the bottom of the hour. But coming up next, senior writer and editor for AtlantaFalcons.com, Will McFadden, joins the program. And he was there today. What did he see? How is the vibe? What is this situation in Atlanta looking like? You don't want to miss that conversation. It's next.